Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
You don't need a Bible in court. You really don't need it. I mean, it's an old idea. I get it, that it's traditional and everything, but really, all you would have to do in order to make sure that whomever was on the witness stand or whatever was telling the truth would be to have them look at that girl, and she would be able to spot whether they were lying or not immediately, because she cannot do anything but deal in truths. So once again, she's telling the truth when she says that this is Pop Talking Aliens. I am William Clear. It is a podcast, and this is more alien news of recent days, or of at least the recent few weeks. We're going to talk about some UFOs spotted in Ireland, the Emerald Isle being invaded by friends or foes from the sky. We are going to talk about Oumuamua. Yes, Oumuamua, which is a strange cigar-shaped object floating around through space that a Harvard scientist has offered the theory that it might be a UFO. And, of course, he has been met with much skepticism, but there have been some things that have been ruled out about Oumuamua that are very interesting. And so when we start to filter out the things that are the usual excuses, we start getting into stuff that's interesting. So we'll talk about that. Obviously, of course, as you well know, Oumuamua, not to be confused with the Pink Floyd Umaguma or Amagama. Oumuamua is Hawaiian, as you know, for visitor from a long distance who is coming here for the first time. So that's what it's called. But before we start that, there has been an olive branch extended to Pop Talk and Aliens. If you have listened to the show before, particularly if you've listened to the Alien episodes, then you are probably familiar with the fact that I've talked many times about Seth Shostak. Seth Shostak is, of course, the head of SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Mythologized in movies like Independence Day and Contact, he is in charge of this program, which searches for extraterrestrial signals from space, radio signals, and audio signals, and whatnot. They use lots of satellites to do so. And Seth is a guy who runs probably the most well-known program on Earth that is involved with looking for extraterrestrials, and yet he never tends to believe any story regarding extraterrestrials. And I've talked about this at great length. But Seth has offered an olive branch to Pop Talk and Aliens directly. A direct olive branch to Pop Talk and Aliens. And I'm going to play that for you now.
I'm Seth Shostak, and you're listening to Pop Talk and Aliens, if you can believe that.
If you can believe that, he says, if you believe that, which is great. I'm glad he said that, because it illustrates sort of his point of view. But I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that Seth Shostak did that. He's somewhat familiar with the podcast only because our friend and a guy who's been a guest a couple times on Pop Talk and Aliens a while back, Bobby Chastain, had Mr. Shostak into his studio. Bobby runs KMVT, a television studio in Mountain View, which is where SETI is based. And so Seth stopped by, and Bobby told him a little bit about the program and what we talk about. And, you know, he told Seth that, look, this show is not trying to convince anyone that aliens exist, but it's telling you stories. It's saying we're giving you reports, trying to lay out the, you know, the facts on both sides. And Seth appreciated that. But he still put a little dig in about believing, which I think was great. And so there's a better than reasonable chance that I might be talking with Seth Shostak sometime in the next year or a few months or so. And believe me, if I do, I'm not going to kiss his ass. I will come to him with the same things that I've come to him on this show about without him being here. I will ask him why he writes articles on his website where there's a gigantic picture of a gray alien with a circle and a line through it, and why he is so committed to not believing in that. I would like to know. But he did, Bobby asked me, he said, if you could ask Seth one thing, what would it be? And I'll ask him for you. So I said, please ask him what he thinks of Oumuamua. And Seth Shostak gave a very interesting answer for us. And that is, he thinks that this thing is not alien at all. And I'll get into a lot of detail about what it is, you know, physically and what its whole history is. But his answer was, he doesn't think it's alien at all. No surprise. And he thinks that kind of what people have latched onto and what has made them very excited about it is the concept art. So if you look up Oumuamua, just look up Harvard Alien Probe. You're never going to be able to spell that fucking thing. Look up Harvard Alien Probe and you'll see artist renderings of it. And what it kind of looks like somewhat is like it's like a cigar-shaped rock. It's somewhat reminiscent of the probe in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, that's trying to talk to the whales. Except instead of being all slick like that, it's like rocky. Not to be confused with the Rocky Balboa. So, we're going to start with the Irish UFOs. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that Pop Talk and Aliens is sponsored by Audible.com. You, as a Pop Talk and Aliens listener, can get 1 free month of Audible on your phone, and you can use it on your computer, any device you have, your Alexa, your Echo, what have you, free for 30 days. You get a free audiobook just because you listen to the show. So you can do that by going to audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. That's audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. Pick out a book. Listen to it for free, 30 days. Listen to it while you're driving around. Listen to it while you're running. I'm listening to an alien book right now. I was driving my son up to his high school in Gold Country, listening to this alien book, and it was fantastic. So you can do the same, absolutely free. Try it out for 30 days. If you don't like it, you don't like it. You don't have to do anything. It's free. Audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. So let's start with these Irish UFOs. So on Friday, November 9th, in Ireland, off the coast, the BBC has reported that, and I quote, "The Irish Aviation Authority is investigating reports of bright lights and UFOs off the southwest coast of Ireland." Now, I know what you're thinking, and I want you to slow down on what you're thinking, because I know what it is, and it's this. A couple of drunk Irish guys flying a plane. It's not what happened, all right? They weren't drunk, and as a matter of fact, if you really want to just insist that the Irish guys are drunk, the Irish guys weren't the guys that saw the UFO. It was British pilots, okay? High class, obviously, British. Credibility all over the place, okay? So it was not a couple of guys who had one too many Guinnesses and hopped in a plane and started seeing stuff, okay? I can make these jokes because I'm Irish. Anyway, but it wasn't Irish pilots. So let's get back to it. The Irish Aviation Authority is investigating reports of bright lights and UFOs off the southwest coast of Ireland. It began at 6:47 local time on Friday, November 9th, when a British Airways pilot, not Irish, contacted Shannon Air Traffic Control. She wanted to know if there were military exercises in the area because there was something, quote, moving so fast. The air traffic controller, Irish, said there were no such exercises. The pilot flying from the Canadian city of Montreal to Heathrow Airport said there was a very bright light, quote, and the object had come along the left side of the aircraft before it rapidly veered to the north. She was wondering what it could be, but said it did not seem to be heading for a collision. Thank God, right? Because the UFOs, they crash sometimes and it causes a big stir. Like Roswell, which is going to be the next episode, and it's going to be like 3 hours. Anyway, I'm sorry, getting back to the Irish UFOs. Another pilot from a Virgin plane joined in and suggested that it might be a meteor or another object re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. Now, he said there were, quote, multiple objects following the same sort of trajectory and that they were very bright. The pilot said he saw two bright lights over to the right, which climbed away at speed. One pilot said the speed was astronomical, quote. It was like Mach 2, quote, which is twice the speed of sound, by the way. Mach 2, twice the speed of sound. What could it have been? Now, Apostolos Christo, probably got that name wrong, an astronomer from the Observatory and Planetarium, the Armagh Observatory and Planetarium, said that what the pilot saw was probably a piece of dust entering the Earth's atmosphere at a very high speed. Now, let's just go back and remember that these people said that they were bright, big bright lights moving at astronomical speeds past the speed of sound, and this guy says that they were dust. Now, look, I say this all the time on this podcast. I am not a scientist. I'm not a scientific authority. I don't even know if I passed science in high school. Okay, so when I question stuff, I don't want to come across as like the flat Earth guy saying, well, that doesn't make sense. If you can't fly over Antarctica, then the Earth must be flat. Like, I don't want to draw those kind of conclusions, okay? However, dust, let me tell you what this guy had to say. He said, it was most likely what commonly are called shooting stars. I don't think he probably talked like that. I don't even know what kind of accent that is. But again, let me stop again and say, these are trained pilots. I mean, the drunk in the air traffic controller booth, the Irish person, maybe they don't know what a shooting star is. All stars look like shooting stars. But the pilots are well trained in aviation and flying, and they've seen a fucking shooting star before. Even if not from a plane, I'm sure there was, at some point in one of these pilots' lives, they were on a romantic date, sitting on a hill, drinking wine, looking up and seeing the shooting star, and, you know, or something. Chances are they've seen a shooting star. But this guy says it was most likely what are commonly called shooting stars. What else, commonly called? What the fuck else are they called? That's all they're called. He goes on to say, it appears the matter is extremely bright, so it must have been quite a large piece of material. I cannot say from the pilot's description, but it could have been the size of a walnut or an apple. Maybe it was bigger than that. I mean, they saw these things flying through the sky. They reported them. I'm going to actually play you a short clip of the air traffic controller conversation. And I've listened to the whole thing. It's pretty long and there's nothing in it, but have you seen it? Yes, I see it. Have you seen it? Yes, I see it. There's one decent clip and I'll play it for you in a moment, but let's get back to this debunker guy who works at some sort of planetarium or something. He's an astronomer. He doesn't know if the things were bigger than a walnut or an apple. And he's basing that, and his belief that they might be shooting stars on the descriptions from the pilot and the air traffic controller. Nothing else. He didn't see it. It also appears there were bits coming off the object and flying past the aeroplane. That is also what you could expect if it were a particularly large rock from space hitting the atmosphere. It would tend to fragment. Particularly large rock, shape of walnut or apple, dust, shooting star. He's managed to work all of those into four sentences. Pick your poison, dude. Following reports from a small number of aircraft on Friday, November 9th of unusual air activity, the Irish Aviation Authority has filed a report. This report will be investigated under the normal confidential occurrence investigation process. Spokesperson for Shannon Airport said that it would not be appropriate for the airport to comment while the IAA investigation is ongoing. And that investigation is ongoing to this day. As of this recording, we're just about a month since those spaceships were seen flying through the air, or dust, or shooting stars, or apples, or walnuts, or meteors. We'll find out, I guess, in the investigation as to which one of those specific things it was. But let me play you what we do have, you know, what little excitement we have, physical evidence or, you know, audio from it, at least, in the form of the air traffic controller conversation. This, again, is just a short clip where there's the most activity going through back and forth from the pilots and the air traffic controller, because most of the time it's like dead silence for a long time, and then like the guy will chime in and say, do you still see him? And the person will say, yes, I do. But here's the initial excitement of it, if you will. Just a few seconds, but enjoy.
There's nothing showing on either primary or secondary.
Okay, it was moving so fast, in fact, you can no longer see it, but yes, thank you.
Alongside you?
get to come up on our left-hand side and then rapidly veer to the north. There's still bright light, and then it's just disappeared at a very high speed. And we were just wondering. We didn't think it was a likely collision course. We're just wondering what that could have been.
Now, taken in a vacuum, all by itself, this isn't really that interesting of a UFO case necessarily, except for a couple of things. The first is it's been a month and we still haven't heard anything back from the Irish aviation people that are investigating this thing. And if it was a meteor, you'd think that would be pretty quick. Normally when there's something like that, certainly when it happens in the U.S., I don't know, maybe the Irish have been too drunk. I'm stop making those jokes. Again, I am like completely Irish, okay? William Clear. There is essentially 100% Irish in my ancestry. And I went to do one of those ancestry things, you know, where you go and you get your DNA tested and it tells you who you're related to and stuff. I went to the mall and where the DNA place is, and the woman said, "Sir, we can't do a DNA test on you because it would be a waste of a needle. Because if I wanted to do a DNA test on you, I would just stick the syringe into a Guinness can." And I told her, I said, "I actually haven't had a drink since 2010. And she's like, "Ah, that's what they all say. Hey, you guys, that's what you all say. You give this number that seems semi-realistic, like 8 years. It's not 10 years. It's not 20 years. It's not 3 months. It's always like 8 years. You always say that. But, you know, we don't need your alcohol-infested blood around here. So why don't you get out of the 23andMe shop?" I know it's not a shop. I know it's like a thing you do at home and you spit into it. But even that, we know now that the big pharmaceutical companies are keeping that DNA. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies, for God's sake, a man wants to take a simple DNA test to find out if he's prone to diabetes, and then you're going to steal his essence? Can't a man wants to find out if he's going to have a massive stroke at the age of 50. And so he takes one of these tests, and now, next thing you know, cloning. Obviously, that's what it would be. It would be cloning. Why else would they keep all this stuff? Because, I mean, really, if you want to build, like, literally the master race, not just going by color and you know, where you're from, but if you, like, from their DNA, you wanted to build the master race, you use the DNA, and then you just clone people. So 23andMe is, like, you know, what it means is that there's going to be 23 of you if you hit all the right buttons on their test there. But, yeah, let's get back to the story. The Irish investigation is ongoing. It's been over a month now, and there's still no word, no update, nothing, which can often result in the story never coming back. I did an episode about the Rendlesham Forest incident in the 80s in England, where the story was, you know, there was this whole UFO deal. You can listen to the episode if you'd like. It's great stuff. There was this whole UFO sighting, these military people. It was a military base. It was put under investigation and never came back. Never saw the light of day. There might have been some half-ass excuse issued at some point. I don't quite remember. But for the most part, generally speaking, gone. Just put it away. Same thing happened with Roswell initially. You know, Roswell was a big thing for like 3 or 4 days globally. And then weather balloon and it was gone. At least they made the weather balloon excuse. There's been no excuse or reason given for this Irish UFO thing so far. But the reason that it is not, to me, a just small thing that should be brushed off the way Luke Skywalker brushed off Kylo Ren's attack in The Last Jedi, is the fact that, as I've talked about on this podcast before, and as I cannot stress enough, that in December of 2017... a Department of Defense video was released of a UFO, an unidentified flying object, flying at incredible speeds, doing ridiculous maneuvers, and the head of the program, the government program that was assigned to look at these things, which was, let me get this right, the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program. Luis Elizondo said, "Everything but it was something from outer space. I mean, he wouldn't say that for sure, but he basically said we can rule out almost everything else. And we'll get to that with Oumuamua. A lot of things have been ruled out about that. So when some British pilot is flying over the coast of Ireland and there's crazy UFO activity, it's not as easy these days to simply brush it off as dust, walnuts, apples, and meteors. Because of the fact that we now know that there is shit out there that does weird stuff in the atmosphere. There's videotape of it, you know, from the government. Well, I can't trust the government, Bill. Well, look, there's something to that tape. There's something to that guy coming out and talking about it. So for me now, when I see these UFO stories, much more interesting to me because of the fact that, once again, we know now that there's stuff out there that's flying around weird. It's not flying normal. It's doing weird stuff, which is what these things were doing, these Irish UFOs. So I will, of course, keep you updated. If anything comes of this story, I will let you know. And if nothing comes of this story, I will let you know, because that will be even more interesting, my friends. There have been other UFO sightings recently, and I'm actually going to play you a clip of a national news reporter talking about this later. But there have been UFO near misses and things similar to the Irish UFO that have happened recently that have been also reported in news outlets that are not thealienunderground.com or whatever. I'm sure that's a real website. I didn't look. But here's one. This one's just from several months ago, 2018. And this story is two different planes seeing the same mysterious UFO over Arizona. And the FAA is puzzled. The Federal Aviation Administration, and I quote from the article, has no explanation for a mysterious bright object seen by pilots of two separate aircraft over the Arizona desert in February. So that's February of 2018. A flight-controlled recording of the exchanges between the pilots and air traffic control officials was released by the FAA and published by the Drive.com's War Zone earlier this month. That sounds a little sketchy, but this is from SF Gate. So let's listen in on that exchange.
There's 7-1 Papa Golf, good.
And there was anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 7-1 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. A UFO. Yeah.
American 1095, let me know if you see anything pass over you here in the next 15 miles.
You know if anything passes over?
American 1095, affirmative. We had an aircraft in front of you that's 37 that reported something pass over him, and we didn't have any targets. So just let me know if you see anything pass over you.
Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over us. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. So yeah, I passed right over the top of us.
Okay, American 1095, thank you.
There's another story, another one about a UFO almost crashing into a goddamn airplane over Manchester. Again, them attacking England. There was a report about this near miss that was released by the UK government about this the UFO almost crashing into a goddamn British airplane. And the official story, and this is, I'm taking this from a website called tall-white-aliens.com. And I'm not getting any of their opinion on it because I don't trust this website any further than I could throw it. But they've put the document out, and I'm just looking at the document of the official report. And I have to be honest with you, this website is creeping me out. The background, there's like a picture of a woman, blonde hair, very beautiful, but there's something off. I can't tell what it is. And then there's these two shadowy figures that are scary as fuck. And then there's the planet Earth, and then there's a gray, like a normal gray, but he's super menacing. Like this guy is up to no good. And then there's another like gray type alien, but it's green and has like red cat eyes, like Sith eyes. I'm not going to read from this page very long. It was really creepy, man. Tall-white-aliens.com. But anyway, just to I'm just going to rifle through this real quick because I don't want to look at this shit anymore. Basically, they print the exchange of the aircraft pilot saying, we just had something go down this RHS just above us very fast. And the air traffic controller says, well, there's nothing seen on radar. And the pilot then says, well, it had lights. It went down the starboard side very, very quick. And then the air traffic controller says, and above you? Yeah, just slightly above us, yeah. And then the air traffic controller says, keep an eye out for something. I can't see anything at all on the at the moment on the radar. Must have been, I don't know, it must have gone down very quickly after it passed, I guess. And the guy says, okay, well, there you go. Now, the possibility that the object might have been a hang glider, paraglider, or microlite was investigated, but all the operating authorities, without exception, agreed that this was an extremely unlikely explanation for various reasons. And then they also go on to mention several other things that it was ruled out, including... No way. A weather balloon. A weather balloon. Really? Do we really still have weather balloons? And they keep having to be ruled out every time there's a UFO? I can understand in 1947, Roswell, right? There, you know, weather balloons. And we didn't have the kind of technology we have now. So they would put a balloon up in the sky and the balloon would figure out the weather or whatever and it would come down. But we have phones that can tell you where you are at all times. We have phones that can tell you how to get to the nearest titty bar by foot or by public transit or by car or by bike. And you're telling me we're still sending up balloons to predict the weather? If you watch a weather report, it's a radar. It's a Doppler radar. The guy or girl is standing in front of like a blue screen, and the radar projection is going on behind them. It's not a balloon that's telling them what the weather's going to be. I mean, it's all radar. What are these balloons still floating around, and how can we only hear about them if there's a UFO sighting? You never hear about a weather balloon in general. You never hear about an airplane almost crashing into a weather balloon, and they know it was a weather balloon because it was going up from the weather balloon place. And it was about to land at the news station and tell them what the weather was going to be. I mean, it's that they're not relying on weather balloons. You don't see, you're never watching the news and they say, and now we're going to go over to Sam with the weather report. And then they cut to Sam and he's standing in front of a blue screen that doesn't have anything on it. And he's all freaked out. And he's like, back to you. The balloon crashed. I got nothing. The balloon crashed. Back to you. They don't, weather balloons, figuring out the weather. You just drive, have you ever been driving down the street and seen a weather balloon take off and you're driving with your kid and you say, son, that balloon is going to get up into the sky and it's going to figure out the weather. And when it comes back down, it's going to report to the news guy that we watch on TV and he's going to tell us what the weather is. No, they use fucking radar. Again, I never on the show like to get super conspiratorial and say that I just flat out don't believe something. But I don't know with this weather balloon stuff, because I never hear about a weather balloon unless it's being ruled out or if it's being used as an excuse for UFO. I just don't think we're using balloons to figure out the weather anymore. Look, one of the things people are always bitching about when it comes to UFOs, or not bitching, but what one of the things they always use to prove their point about how UFOs are not a big deal is that they always say, well, if it was really a big deal, you know, there'd be more coverage. It would be on the national news. And I've said this before, you'll find plenty of it on local news because local news doesn't have a lot to say. In half an hour, there's only so many rapes a day that you can report on. So they have to come up with something. And sometimes if someone sees, you know, lights in the sky or whatever, they'll report it on channel 20 at 11 with Mark and Susan or whatever. But recently there has been UFO coverage on not only national news, but the supreme leader of national news. Fox News. And I'm not talking about Neil Cavuto's Business Hour and the UFO. I'm not talking about even Shepard Smith or Fox and Friends, where the president always watches. I don't watch these shows. I just know that this is what they're called because they're always on everything that every news thing I try to read has Fox in it and stuff. But I don't watch any of this. The people screaming at each other. I can't stand it. The liberal screaming, the conservative screaming, just all this. There's so much screaming. Stop screaming. And I'm not saying I'm not better than you if you watch that stuff. I'm not being on my high horse saying I only read the news. I just can't stand the screaming. But I will say that I do know who Tucker Carlson is. And I do know that he reigns through the evening ratings with an iron fist and a rapier wit. And I know that his show is not fucking coast to coast with Tucker Carlson. It's not Art Bell stuff that he's talking about. You know, he, whenever I see him, I've seen, you know, here and there, he's mad or about a liberal or something. And it never has anything to do with anything of the paranormal. But he has now covered UFO sightings twice. Twice. Tucker Carlson, a man who does prime time Fox News that everybody watches, whether they like it or not. He's covering UFOs at this point. Okay, so I don't know what else you could possibly ask for. Tucker Carlson, a man who used to hang out with Christopher Hitchens. And he's talking UFOs. I'm going to play you a clip from both of them. And the best thing about it is that, regardless, who fuck is politics? Who cares? We're talking about UFOs here. The one clip he has is from Luis Elizondo, the guy that from the aerial threat program. And the other one he has is Nick Pope. Nick Pope, who I've talked about numerous times on the show because he used to be part of the UFO program in the British Ministry of Defense. And he's, you know, he's a guy who's on every time they talk about UFOs, but it's usually shows like the History Channel or Ancient Aliens or, you know, whatever, like a fringe UFO show. This is the king of primetime cable news. I assume he's, I don't know, I didn't look at the ratings, but I know he's hugely popular. So this is fucking Tucker Carlson. National news, this is what you want. So you're going to get it. This is him talking about UFOs. Twice.
UFOs have captivated the public interest for decades, but they've always been dismissed, including by me, as the province of wackos. But that is changing thanks to some remarkable videotape and firsthand accounts from very sober people who are trained to identify aircraft. Okay, these are guys who fly for a living, who know what other airplanes look like, including those maintained by foreign governments, and they're totally shocked by this. This is one among many incidents like it, including many that have happened in the middle of the day to sober people, lots of independent witnesses at the same event, commercial pilots, military pilots, O'Hare Airport in the afternoon. None of them have obvious explanations. These are aircraft, apparently, that are moving in ways that appear to violate physics, that are flying very differently from any aircraft ever observed, and way faster than any plane that we know any foreign country has. What is this? Well, we don't know, because for some reason the Defense Department is not interested in finding out. Lou Elizondo is a former Pentagon official. He helped research UFOs. He said the DOD is not taking any of this seriously for some reason. Mr. Elizondo joins us tonight. Luke, good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
So did I overstate that? Is there a growing corpus of evidence, not drunk people on a lonely rural road at 3 a.m, but sober military pilots saying something that we can't explain is happening?
That is correct. You're talking about individuals who have very high security clearances. They are trained observers. We've actually paid them and put them through schools to be trained and very keen observers to scrutinize what they're seeing. These are individuals who we trust to fly weapons platforms, sometimes with live munitions, over U.S. cities and to fight and win wars on our behalf. And they're reporting to us that they're seeing something that they can't explain. And it's also being backed up by the video evidence and the radar data and other witnesses.
But these must just be weather balloons, right?
Well, the weather balloons that are expressing technologies that are far beyond our current understanding of aerodynamics, things that are maneuvering in ways that no aircraft that we are currently aware of has that capability to. Flight performance characteristics that are well beyond the threshold of what we would consider, I think, normal or routine for aircraft.
So they have no flight surfaces, no wings or anything approaching a wing, and there's also no obvious propulsion. So infrared doesn't pick up any jet trail or rocket exhaust coming out of these things.
Right, or a plume. You know, there's many ways to have propulsion. You can do it with a jet engine, for example,
right.
A propeller or a rocket engine. In this particular case, you have objects that are doing things, maneuvering in ways without any obvious sign of propulsion and defying the natural effects of Earth's gravitational
pull. At what speeds?
Cool. Some are very, very, very fast.
Faster than our aircraft or known
absolutely.
Aircraft?
Absolutely. Hypersonic speeds. And by the way, without any obvious signs or signatures involved. So when an object's moving through the atmosphere, you would expect it to have certain signatures associated with that particular aircraft, whether it's a missile, drone, rocket. So, for example, you might see a heat signature coming from it. You might see ionization of the atmosphere.
Right.
You might hear a sonic boom, which you normally would. It's an acoustic signature. In this particular case, these objects don't have any of those signatures.
So we know that they're not U.S. military because they wouldn't be flying near U.S. military aircraft as they so often have. And it seems like we would know if foreign countries had that technology. Look, I have no idea what it is. The bottom line is this is a potential threat, a grave one to our country. What is DOD doing about it?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of DOD right now because I'm no longer employed as a Department of Defense employee, but I can speak to what they were doing about it and what they weren't doing about it when I was part of the program. I think DOD is a very large, complex organization. I think it's very good at what it normally does. But in this particular case, we had a very ill-defined problem set. And so when you're going to the boss and you say, look, boss, we have something here. We don't know what it is. We sure don't know how it works, and by the way, there's nothing we can do about it. That is a very difficult conversation to have in an organization that is its sole mission is national security.
It's
right?
I think it's terrifying. I mean, this seems potentially like one of the biggest stories of my lifetime, and I don't care if it's about UFOs or whatever you call it. Something that we don't understand is getting very close to our military aircraft. And the government isn't responding adequately. And I hope you keep sounding the alarm on this.
Yeah, I think, if I may, just very quickly.
We've got 10 seconds.
Okay. You go to the metro, you see a sign, see something, say something, and we get an attaboy for reporting it. In this particular case, these pilots who are seeing something and is backed up by other data, it's nothing.
It's terrifying. That's the essence of dysfunction. Lou, thank you for that. I hope you'll come back. Nick Pope is a journalist who has spent years researching UFOs for the British government. He says that UFOs aren't just real. They also frequently come close to crashing into commercial airliners, among other things. Nick Pope joins us tonight. Nick, thank you very much for coming on. So it's really not a question of do governments believe UFOs are real? Yes, they do. The United States government does. The British government does. The question is, do they have any idea what they are, where they're from?
No, we don't. We keep an open mind on it. We don't rule anything off, you know, take nothing off the table with this. Our point really is that whatever these things turn out to be, there is a serious defense, national security, and air safety issue here.
Well, so that's kind of the nub of it, and that's where my interest comes from. So why aren't governments encouraging the population to, as they say about terrorism, if you see something, say something, report sightings to the government so we can make sense of this potential threat?
Well, they should be. And that's what we certainly did at the Ministry of Defense for many years. We took it very seriously. Our own pilots were seeing these things. We were having radar operators track them. And we knew, again, through intelligence and through open source material, we knew that the Russians and the Chinese and others were working on this too. The problem was that just the pop culture baggage from the term UFO, flying saucer, little green men, people don't take it seriously. But they should.
Commercial pilots have very often reported sighting objects in the air that seem to defy the laws of physics. To what extent are these objects a threat to commercial aviation, potentially?
Well, certainly the British Ministry of Defence and our Civil Aviation Authority, which is the UK equivalent of your FAA, have dozens of cases in our files about near misses, some of which where pilots have had to take evasive action. When we have these near misses, we right. sure as heck should be doing more to find out.
You know, actually, as I was listening to Tucker Carlson just now, I was just looking through the YouTubes at Tucker Carlson UFO, and there's actually a third segment that he did where he talked to an FA-18 Super Hornet pilot who chased a UFO. Should I play that too? Yeah, we gotta play that, right? Come on. FA-18 Super Hornet pilot chased a UFO? Talks to Tucker Carlson? Yeah. I mean, I don't want this to be the Tucker Carlson hour, but this is good shit because it's, again, this is like influential national news. People vote because of shit they hear on this TV station. You know, if this guy, whatever political bent he is, can get people to start believing in UFOs, then we are on the right track, my friends. Because UFOs, after the 90s, like the 90s, there was just this big influx of UFO stuff. There was, they made a movie about Roswell with Kyle MacLachlan and Martin Sheen and the whole Bob Lazar thing, the Phoenix Lights. There was just, it was all over the place all the time. Independence Day with Area 51 and SETI and just the whole ball of wax all the time. It was just shoved in our faces and then it went away. I mean, it didn't go away, but it went out of the public culture. It was not really a thing anymore. It was not hip, UFOs. And then, you know, we started getting iPhones and stuff, and nobody had like the cool, like perfect picture of the UFO spaceship with the gray in the window steering it and all that stuff. So people just said, oh, you know, fuck it. There's no UFOs. Somebody would have had tape by now. Well, now there is tape, and it comes from the Department of Defense, and it's caught the attention of Fox News. So, yeah, let's listen to this third clip by Tucker Carlson. Why not?
Well, we had launched on a routine training mission. When we joined up, we were told that the event was going to be canceled and that we have real-world tasking, and we were sent out to the west. Now, take in mind that this has taken place about 100 miles southwest of San Diego, between San Diego and Ensenada, Mexico.
Yeah.
On a clear, perfect day, blue waters. We get out to the spot where they tell us it's at. We start looking around, and both of us, both airplanes, see a disturbance in the water and a white 40-foot long tic-tac shaped object just hovering above the water, going forward, back, left, right. There's no rotor wash, there's no wings, nothing. So as we drive around in a clockwise flow, we get to about the 9 o'clock position, and I said, well, I'm gonna go down and check it out, and the other jet is gonna stay high. So as we go down, when we get to the 12 o'clock position, it starts to mirror us. So it's in a clockwise flow and it's on the opposite side of the circle from us. And we continue this. It's in a climb, we're in a descent, we're getting a great look at it. This whole thing takes about probably up to 5 minutes from the time we show up. I get over to the 8 o'clock position, it's at about the 2 o'clock position, and I decide I'm gonna go and see what it is, and it's about 2,000 feet below me. And I cut across the circle, and as I get within about a half mile of it, it rapidly accelerates to the south in about 2 seconds and disappears.
What would you estimate the speed?
Oh, well above supersonic. It like a bullet out of a gun, it took off.
So from what you know about aerodynamics, mechanics, physics, should this be possible, what you saw?
Not with the technology that we have today. Not at all.
Even now, even 13 years later, is there anything that you know of capable of this kind of behavior?
No, there's nothing I know of. I mean, this, when we saw the video with the IR, it has no exhaust, no discernible things of anything form of propulsion. And this thing came from a dead hover over the water, just kind of moving around, to a climb up to about 12,000 feet, to rapidly accelerating away in a climb, and in less than 2 seconds it was gone. And you figure you're talking 50 miles of visibility, and you can easily see an object that size easily out to 10 miles, and it just disappeared in seconds.
What would be the effects on a human pilot of the G-forces involved in that altitude change?
Well, the altitude wouldn't be bad. It would be the acceleration of the object.
That's what right.
I wanted to fly it.
Yeah,
but,
I bet.
There's, talking to some physicists, they don't think the human body could handle that kind of force without acceleration.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the human body could. So bottom line, what do you think this was?
I believe, as do the other folks that were on the flight that when we visually saw it, that it was something not from this world.
Presumably you expressed that belief to your superiors, what did they say?
Actually, we caught a lot of grief getting back to the boat, and it got passed off as an event that no one could explain. Now, keep in mind, they had been tracking these for 2 weeks prior to us seeing it, and this was the first time that manned airplanes had been airborne when the objects appeared.
This feels like a really big story to me. It's not exactly clear why Vladimir Putin's more interesting than this. I think this seems like a big deal. And Commander, I appreciate your taking the time to talk to us about it. You seem sober and believable, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Tucker.
Even more interesting. Now, let's dig a little deeper, because this involves Harvard. And, you know, as I said, Seth Shostak has chimed in on it. And that's Oumuamua. Yes, Oumuamua. So here's what goes down. NASA has telescopes that every night, while you sleep and you dream, they watchdog the galaxy for collision threats, a.k.a. things that might collide with Earth, obviously. I don't know what it thinks it can do about them, but nonetheless, it's got its eyes peeled. Then the images are given a look-see by NASA personnel just to make sure they aren't weird or a threat or spaceship. Never is. Never a problem. Until October 2017, when they saw something that was absolutely hauling ass across the stars, to the point where, with whatever scientific measurements they use, they determined that the speed demon was, in fact, not from our solar system. Not from our solar system, ladies and gentlemen. Not some broken off piece of one of Jupiter's moons. Not some piece of Chinese space junk that's always floating around our planet and turning it into a galactic dump. None of that. This thing they figured out was a speeding space bullet from parts unknown. So, listen, the nearest solar system, after reading up on this, the nearest solar system is 4.4 light years away. So if something like this is coming from that far, it took 50,000 years to get here. Its closest approach to the Earth was 15 million miles. That's when the watchful eye of the NASA telescopes caught a glimpse of this thing. And the thing they caught, that very glimpse, the telescope, was located in Hawaii. So NASA asked a couple of Hawaiian people, I think it was a linguist and some sort of scientist, what they should call this thing. And instead of calling it, object 5678AB or whatever, they called it Oumuamua. Oumuamua, which translates to, there's different ways of translating it, but apparently, basically, it is a messenger, scout, or visitor from a long distance coming here for the first time. Now, let me emphasize that this thing was the first major observable piece of anything from another solar system that we have ever been able to observe. And given the fact that it was faster than fuck, there were only a few days to actually see it. So the observatory had a very limited time, and they had to put together a lot of resources working around the clock 24 hours a day just so they could get a glimpse of this thing, because it was just, again, hauling ass. And not far from the Earth, but far enough to where it became brighter and darker and brighter and darker. Now, they've said, these scientists, that if this thing had actually collided with Earth, which it could have because we didn't see it, in time, it was going so fast that if this thing had been on a collision course with Earth, dead. Because there's no time to see it. It wasn't like, what's the movie, Deep Impact or Armageddon, where we got a little time to put together a nice crew of astronauts and to get the cool astronaut and the girl astronaut and get them all together and go blow the thing up. This thing would have fucking slit through us like we were tissue paper. And the best part is that a Harvard scientist began a study on this and started to rule out certain things that it could have been. And not his conclusion, but one of the possibilities that he left open was that it was some sort of probe from an alien world outside our solar system. And from an article on CNN, it says, since its discovery, scientists have been at odds to explain its unusual features and precise origins, with researchers first calling it a comet, then an asteroid, before finally deeming it the first of its kind, a new class of interstellar object. A new paper by researchers at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics raises the possibility that the elongated dark red object, which is 10 times as long as it is wide and traveling at speeds of 196,000 miles per hour, might have an artificial origin, quote unquote. Oumuamua, and this is a quote, maybe a fully operational probe sent intentionally to Earth by an alien civilization, they wrote in the paper. This is a Harvard fucking paper, not a student at Harvard, but researchers at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics say that it may be a fully operational probe sent intentionally to Earth by an alien civilization. And this has been submitted to the Astrophysical Journal Letters, which I believe is a prestigious place to be published. The theory is based on the object's excess acceleration, or its unexpected boost in speed as it traveled through and ultimately out of our system in January. Quote, considering an artificial origin, one possibility is that it is a light sail floating in interstellar space as debris from an advanced technological equipment. You know, what's funny is that I was watching, you know, when I was getting ready to do this podcast, I was watching a bunch of news reports about this. And there was one news report who was talking about this, how it was a light sail floating in interstellar space. And he actually showed a clip of Attack of the Clones with Christopher Lee floating in his sailing ship, which was great. I thought it was great. Anyway, getting back to this article, the paper was written by Abraham Loeb. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, but it's my best guess. Professor, chair of astronomy, and Shmuel Balai. I'm so sorry for butchering your names. A postdoctoral scholar at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. They've published 4 books and more than 700 papers on topics like black holes, the future of the universe, the search for extraterrestrial life, and the first stars. The paper points out that comparable light sails exist on Earth. Quote, light sails with similar dimensions have been designed and constructed by our own civilization, including the Icaros project and the Starshot initiative. The light sail technology may be abundantly used for transportation of cargoes between planets or between stars. In the paper, the pair theorize that the object's high speed and its unusual trajectory could be the result of, if no longer being operational. The article goes on to say, at first, astronomers thought the rapidly moving faint light was a regular comet or asteroid that had originated in our solar system. Comets in particular are known to speed up due to outgassing process in which the sun heats the surface of the icy comet, releasing melted gas. But this did not have a coma, which is what that is. And the atmosphere and dust that surrounds comets as they melt. It had none of these indications, not a comet. Multiple telescopes focused on the object for 3 nights to determine what it was before it moved out of sight. And then one of the researchers from the paper says, it is exciting to live in a time when we have the scientific technology to search for evidence of alien civilizations. He goes right back to that. The Harvard guy goes right back to the alien civilizations thing. The evidence is not conclusive, but interesting. I will be truly excited once we have conclusive evidence. But now we have the naysayers, the fucking killjoys that have to come in every time and rain on the parade. And in this case, a guy named Alan Jackson at the Center for Planetary Sciences at the University of Toronto Scarborough, not exactly Harvard, says, I'm distinctly unconvinced and honestly think the study is rather flawed.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and this paper is distinctly lacking in evidence. Never mind extraordinary evidence.
That was, I was reading a quote from him, but I am goddamn sure that's exactly what he sounds like. He says that the spectral data from the probe looks like an asteroid or comet, while that of a solar sail would look different. Even though they fucking just indicated why it was not a comet. The Harvard guys, not the fucking Toronto public school teacher. Nothing against public school teachers. You're all, you know, God bless your work. You're doing God's work. Anyway, that is generally the big story on this, is that it's NASA saying it's not a comet. The Harvard researchers are saying it's not a comet. The Toronto guy who teaches fucking how to play Jax or whatever says that it is a comet and that it's no big deal. And again, that, I think the quote comes from Carl Sagan about extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. That's my least favorite quote ever. I mean, you know, outside of stuff that Hitler said and stuff, but I mean that in terms of just when, especially when it comes to science and when it comes to UFOs, when it comes to this kind of stuff we talk about on the show, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. No, they don't. Extraordinary claims require evidence. That's it. They just, everything requires evidence. It doesn't have to be fucking extraordinary. Like, if this thing is proven not to be a comet, and if there's somehow, they did not get to observe it very long because it was so fast that, you know, I don't know how much data they can work with to come to a conclusion. Obviously, it didn't land here and say, take us to your leader and stuff like that. So, yeah, we don't have that kind of evidence. But if they're able to rule out all these different things, dust, flying at 196,000 miles an hour. If they're able to prove that it is not all these things, then you can start to begin to deduce, as these two gentlemen have, that possibly, it's something from another world. I don't understand why it's okay for one scientist to say it's probably a comet, and because that is not an extraordinary claim, it requires no evidence. Whereas the scientists who say, well, maybe it's an alien probe, require extraordinary evidence. They're both theories. One requires evidence, and the other requires evidence. In the meantime, we do not know exactly what it is, except for the fact that it came from another solar system. It's the first time something like that has come all the way from another solar system to us, and especially at that kind of speed. So we will keep our eyes peeled on that story. And as it develops, we will continue. I will continue to let you know what the developments are. One last thing before we ride off into the sunset. And again, the next episode is going to be, we're a little late for the 3-year anniversary of Pop Talk and Aliens because it's been about a month since that passed. But nevertheless, we'll do the 3-year anniversary of it by celebrating the Roswell crash, because that episode is no longer on iTunes. So again, you can get all of the episodes of this show going back to the beginning at poptalkaliens.blogspot.com. poptalkaliens.blogspot.com. I know it's not sexy, but it's where we host the links that go to iTunes, and eventually, after a few years, iTunes just drops them off the face of the earth. Happens to everybody. It's not just us. Your treasured Joe Rogan podcasts stop at a certain point. So if you want to hear the old ones, you can. And there's a Roswell one, but it's only like a half an hour. This podcast is going to go deep, ass deep, into Roswell. And so that one will be very long and very fun, and it will have a lot of facts. But before we go, and before we transition into the next alien episode, I want to stop and say something about Star Wars. Yes, Star Wars. It's just going to be for a minute, so relax, please. Several episodes ago, quite a while ago now, the great Charlie Crabtree and I did a very unique episode of Pop Talk and Aliens that was not the standard format. We actually took our equipment and went down to Los Angeles, infiltrated the home of Simon Pegg. And our intent was, because of the fact that Simon Pegg was so anti-prequel, so just venomous hatred towards the Star Wars prequels, that he actually said that he didn't respect anyone who thought those were good movies. And it was at that point, because Charlie had been trying to hold out on the side of Simon Pegg, because, you know, we all love Simon Pegg on screen. He's great. Charlie was trying to hold out. I don't blame him, but he broke. When he heard this quote, he broke. And we had had enough, so we went on this journey. And what we were trying to do was eliminate Simon Pegg from sci-fi for the rest of eternity. It looked like we were successful because he didn't show up in anything except Mission Impossible for years. And he wasn't commenting on Star Wars. He wasn't doing anything. But just recently, very recently, Simon Pegg said two different things. The first was the actor Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks, posted a photo on Instagram of him and his small child standing out on a balcony looking at this beautiful view. And he said, you know, so many years ago, I almost jumped off this because he was so hurt by all the hate that Jar Jar was getting. And Simon Pegg got wind of this comment, and he said that he felt horrible because he was one of those people. And he said, you know, we all thought of Jar Jar as just sort of this alien creature. We didn't think of the fact that there was a man behind this. And I was one of those people who was attacking him. But it gets better. Because in an even a more recent interview with Simon Pegg, they asked him about The Last Jedi, and he said, he said that George Lucas making the prequels was like raping his own children, not raping them, killing them. That he said that George Lucas had lost a fundamental understanding of what Star Wars movies were, and that it was like killing his own children making those movies, and he didn't respect anyone who liked those movies. And then just recently, weeks ago, asked about The Last Jedi, Simon Pegg said, "You know what I thought when I left that movie was, I miss George Lucas." And he was not fucking kidding. He said, for all the shit I gave him about the prequels, there was something about his imagination that is missing from these movies. So Charlie, mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. We got him out of sci-fi and we made him change his mind. Well, really, The Last Jedi made him change his mind, but you know, mind changed, mission accomplished. I mean, of all the people that ever bagged on the prequels, the last person on the face of the earth or on the face of the planet that Oumuamua is from, I can't even say it anymore now, is from, whatever planet that thing's from, last person I'd ever think that would have changed his tune about Star Wars and give props to George Lucas where they are deserved. So on that note, just wanted to say that our efforts paid off. It took a long time. That podcast was very hard, very difficult to make. I suggest you listen to it. But we did it. Chuck, we did it, buddy. And with that, I bid you farewell from 4.5 light years away to here in this room, which I am recording this Pop Talk and Aliens podcast. Thank you for listening. I treasure the fact that every one of you listens to this. And when you send me messages on Facebook, there's people I don't know. There's people I do know and asking me certain things. It warms my heart. And I will never have a Patreon account because that, my friends, when you contact me, when you listen, that's the Patreon. That's what I love. Thank you. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Alien.
Sorry. Late breaking news. I just came across the wire literally as I was finishing up this podcast. Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors champion, two-time MVP, greatest shooter of all time, does not believe we landed on the moon. Just quoted as saying that he does not believe that we landed on the moon. We will cover the story as it develops. I will cover the story as it develops. Steph Curry, no moon. Anyway, again, thanks for listening. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.